Forest Avengers Follow the White Rabbit is a podcast dedicated to practical politics. Practical politics is, of course, called practical politics because it is all non-voting, which makes it very, very practical. Conventional politics is always rule-based politics, every 2 years, every 4 years. It's basically what you do at the voting booth. And then there is full-spectrum practical politics, or engaging and taking down an opponent by any means necessary, using the rules, but never breaking the rules. But to do anything, we have to start with practical politics, and in this case, it's the art of staying on message. It's having a consistent message. And our consistent message is the mantra, or white rabbit genocide, you see on this front page. And we will also, in this podcast, engage in the geopolitical. We will talk about geopolitical events. We will talk about things from a unique white rabbit perspective. We will also go into white rabbit psychology and ecology and talk about everything you'd want to know about the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. And this is, again, the Horace the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. Horace, when are you putting out that next show? Horace, what's going on in the world? Horace, I'm here, I'm back with you. Let's go over some news events. The Green Goddess has put the word out, Godzilla's put the word out. The sun's out of place, and she's going to smack it back into place, and it's going to have all kinds of solar showers and everything else. Apparently we'll make it out all right, but the rest of the rabbit holes on planet Earth are screwed. NASA scientists, the sun awakens. NASA keeps a wary eye on space weather. We're talking about the sun going through all kinds of solar flares and everything else. One of the wildest pieces I've read from helium.com, and it's geology and geophysics. That's helium, helium.com. And you can look up how the ultimate BP Gulf disaster could kill millions. It talks about a big methane deposit in the sea floor and fissures that have already been seen, and a big like methane explosion that sends a tidal wave over Florida. It's a wild piece for on this website, and it's not like an alternative news website at all. It's about basically geophysics and about the ecology and the environment. It's an interesting website, but it came to my attention, and it is a pretty wild read. I may actually post it on my Twitter, but if I don't, you can look it up, helium.com, how the ultimate BP Gulf disaster could kill millions. And I've never read anything quite like it about the Gulf disaster. Let's move over stateside. Let's see, Arizona's next illegal immigration target, babies. All brown babies have to go. All little brown rabbits have to go, go, go. And of course, there's all these different illegal immigration crackdowns coming across America, and they are coming along very nicely. We got all these different states and all these different cities passing all these different kinds of laws, and I can't keep up with it other than the trends toward white rabbits being pissed off. That's the trend. And we had an interesting piece about the president potentially putting out. Numbers USA said the senators challenged President Obama on rumors of amnesty through executive action, that the President Taliban was going to put out an executive action and make all the legal immigrant rabbits, make them all citizens through an executive action. And the senators put out a piece talking about what a problem this would be. Yeah, it would cause an outright revolt. Does this matter to our struggle? Well, the more aggressive they get, the worse it is, or the better it is for us. But our job is simply to stay on message and always point out the obvious over and over again. So our job doesn't really change, but actually stuff like this makes our job easier. As far as the president doing something crazy like amnesty through executive action, well, there's more than enough non-brown rabbits, speckly brown rabbits to be the end of the indigenous white rabbits of Europe. There's more than enough of them that live around us. So, any time they go to extremes like this, it's actually better. It doesn't mean it couldn't result in some disaster in the West or something like that, who knows what extreme measures. Extreme measures always get extreme measures back at it, but, the country's split and it's going to continue to remain that way as everything becomes more and more racial. Our job is simply to stay on message and point out the obvious. It's genocide. It's white rabbit genocide. And, of course, the news is about wars. North Korean envoy warns war could erupt soon. This is Reuters, and go figure. Wars and rumors of wars, natural disasters and rumors of natural disaster. You could do a Google news search on floods, and you're going to see floods all over the world, whether it be the United States and Iowa, and there's always some flash flood going on anymore. You could Google earthquake, and you're going to see earthquakes all over the world. Seriously, it's disasters upon a disaster. Kyrgyzstan seeks Russian help to quell unrest. New York Times, and there's all this stuff out on Kyrgyzstan. The giant in the area of the Kyrgyzstan is Uzbekistan. And the Uzbeks are a big population there, and they're kind of a pariah state. And it's been speculated that this problem in Kyrgyzstan, if someone's trying to create a problem for Russia, or maybe Russia's trying to create a problem for Uzbekistan, but everyone wants Russia to go in there and police the area, and of course Russia says, no way. And the Kyrgyzstans, or the Kyrgyzstanis, the Turkmens, and whatever else is in there, are basically ethnic cleansing the Uzbeks. And the Uzbekistan is kind of the giant in this area, and it considers that whole entire region to be theirs, and they're the most populous people in the region. And it's kind of a disaster. But Russia's not getting involved. Medvedev said basically they can kill each other, and Russians are there will just migrate back to Russia. If Uzbekistan, I'm guessing, attacked any country in the area like Turkmenistan or Kyrgyzstan, I'm guessing Russia would probably send air support to deny them anything, but they're pretty much running around killing each other, and Medvedev says he doesn't really care. Which, you know, it's far away from him. It's in his territory, but there's no way they can police it. All these different populations there are probably going to go at it and wipe each other out in this next war anyways. And this is probably a prelude to that, as well as dust-ups all over the place. But, you know, getting them involved in a war is not something they're quite interested in, especially with all these ethnicities in Eurasia and all these areas around there, all these mixed ethnicities. It's not in their interest. And, someone speculated that it was a problem created to get them in there, to get them embroiled in some war on their way off on their flank, which, you know, there's always going to be wars in these areas or dust-ups in these areas. But as everyone's worried about Uzbekistan coming in there, if they did, Russia might use air support to deny them the right to come in there, or basically team up with Kyrgyzstan and let Kyrgyzstan go to town, really go to town on the Uzbeks, and use Russian air support to overthrow it or something. Under normal circumstances, I would think something like that would happen. We're not under normal circumstances. And Russia doesn't... In spite of what the Kyrgyzstans, different groups want, they don't seem to be interested in sending troops over there. Maybe some aid workers, but not some troops. And we'll see that. We'll see as that develops. But Russia is sending Navy all over the place. They're exercising in the Far East, doing all kinds of stuff, prepping for World War III. And let's see here. German Jews to join new Gaza aid flotilla. Yeah, a bunch of German Jews. This is Julian Kossoff for Telegraph, Telegraph UK. And he says, basically, German Jews plan to send an aid ship to break the Israeli blockade of Gaza. German Jews are going to go at it. They're going to wear swastikas and go over and take over Israel, give it back to the Palestinians or something. I don't know. It's funny stuff. That's a mess. And someone's using it to make an even bigger mess. Dutch police use decoy Jews to stop anti-Semitic attacks. This is another Telegraph piece. This is funny. The Dutch police are used decoy Jew rabbits by dressing law enforcers in Jewish religious dress such as skull caps in an effort to catch anti-Semitic attackers. Eh, guess what they look like? Arabs. Yeah, they let in a bunch of speckly brown rabbits, and the brown shirts all have brown skin, and they're more anti-Semitic than the Nazis probably ever were. Interesting. Ultra-Orthodox Jews protest school ruling. What's happened is they're trying to force integrate. Believe it or not, they're trying to force integrate the ultra-Orthodox minority in Israel. And ultra-Orthodox minority are basically hated, especially the Ashkenazi. They don't work. They study at the Talmud. They do nothing. And most of the Israelis, a lot of the Israelis, are pretty normal people, even way more normal than a lot of their diaspora elites, like the Abe Foxmans. They wouldn't fit in with most Israelis. Believe it or not, but the Ashkenazi ultra-Orthodox are extremely, considered extremely racial. They don't want anything non-Ashkenazi going to school with them. That means none of the brown Jews, nothing other than their own. And they're a big toll on the state. Apparently, they're a big toll on the state. They don't want to their daughters or anyone to study with Middle Eastern Jews or North African Jews, the Sephardim. And it's been a pretty scandalous thing. And of course, what's happened to especially the Jewish elites, as they've been sold out and as they face problems, they look for people to blame. That's what elites do. That's what most rabbits do. They want to blame others for their problems. And I wouldn't be surprised if they don't stick it to the ultra-Orthodox. But basically, they're saying they're going to force integrate an ultra-Orthodox school, and they're basically having all kinds of protests and going wild over it. As an Associated Press piece, ultra-Orthodox Jews protest school ruling. And, of course, on the home front, PayPal has cut off neocons. Some neocon bloggers aren't allowed to raise money PayPal because they say they're hate sites, which is kind of interesting. They're starting to crack. They have all these wild different crackdowns across the planet. And every group in the world thinks the crackdown is just on them. And it's fear, 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 fear. And everyone has their own media. Everyone watches their own media. Most people don't look to a hand, or if they look to other media outlets, they only look to a handful. It doesn't matter whether you have the Iroquois Indians, the Lakota Republic, in America, you have all these little groups in South America, all these little Indian tribes, you have different groups in Taiwan, you have, different groups in the Middle East, the different Arab media outlets. Everyone is pretty much in one big consensus trance. You know, they watch their own media, and they watch maybe at best a couple other media outlets, and they don't look at anything objectively, and they go into tunnel vision. And the worst kind of tunnel vision is one where you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, and you don't know you're in a tunnel vision, and they don't see the way out. And I mean, it doesn't matter whether you talk to the Africans in America think the world is ending for them, and it may. I mean, everyone thinks the world is ending for themselves. Seriously, if you go to these different groups, if you go to their different websites, it's like everything's the end of the world for them. And it may be. I'm not concerned about them. I'm concerned to make sure the indigenous white rabbits of Europe know that there's lights at the end of the tunnel. Race is real, so there's always a light at the end of the tunnel for us. But the world is not ending. Someone's world will. Some groups will probably disappear. 10 years from now, I don't expect the demographics on this planet to be anywhere close to what they are now, especially after this war. I expect that to be rather obvious to most people on this planet. But being in that consensus trance, reading the same information over and over again, especially any type of all hope is lost, you enter into a tunnel vision where there is no light at the end of the tunnel. You can't see your way out. You can't dream of your way out. In fact, if you take an individual like that and tell them there is a way out, they'll get offended by it. They're married to their fate. But that's one of the interesting things that's been happening with the segmentation of the media. The elite can no longer, they don't mind the consensus trance. They don't mind that tunnel vision. They don't mind the fear and making sure people think they have no way out. But what they don't like is being able to control it. You got all these different groups. You got the Arabs that think they're locked in a battle to the death with the Jews. They got to kill all the Jews. Maybe they do. I don't know. But all these groups, I mean, you could sit here all day long and talk about their own spin on the news. Everyone's got their own spin on the news, and no one can control it except that group. And they're all fatalists. I mean, the Africans in America think that the world is over for them, that they're in this battle to the death with the evil white races, and I've seen a white rabbit attack a black rabbit. Really, rarely. Even if they do, it's in self-defense, and that's rare. Most time they just avoid them, because it's pretty much illegal to defend yourself. But it's so the neocons think that everyone's out to get them now. Well, they've been banning all kinds of different groups on PayPal, period, for a long, long time. And every group has a bitch about PayPal. The Arabs have a bitch about PayPal. Different bloggers here, different bloggers there. White nationalists especially, any type of white racialists, have a problem with PayPal going way back. So the neocons are upset now that certain one of their bloggers are being called hate sites. Well, it is what it is. But all these groups have their own media, and they have their own spin on the news, and very few of them are objectively looking across a broad swath of channels. And it leads to a consensus trance. You read the same things over and over again. The Jews are going to get you. The Jews are all powerful. The next thing you know, in your mind, they are, and you're in a tunnel vision. You can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, which means they're over with very soon. Yeah, what you see is what you get, little Jew rabbits. They're already in fighting. They're already turned on the Orthodox. They're already going to this disastrous war. They're over with. they're over with, and as far as the ones you think about, they're over with. They've been outright sold out. They probably could have sold them out a long time ago, but they're such a problem group. Yeah, they're a big problem group. Let's see here. Bernie Madoff. The old Bernie Madoff. He's got a prison buddy. Yeah, his prison buddy is Jonathan Pollard. Many people speculate, and supposedly he's bragging about having $9 billion hidden. People always talk about him laundering money from Mossad. It actually wouldn't surprise me. He has this big scheme going on in New York where he's stealing money. Or stealing money and hiding money or something along those lines. Let's see here. Iran to send blockade-busting ship to Gaza. That was New York Post. New York Post talked about Bernie Madoff being buddy-buddy with Jonathan Pollard. Jonathan Pollard was a big spy for Israel. I just thought that was kind of interesting. I thought I'd throw that in there. But everyone thinks it's the end of the world for them. And for some of them, it may be. But it's kind of funny to see all these different takes, these independent medias. Everyone's got their own media outlet because of the internet, and everyone's in total tunnel vision, all these different groups across the world. I mean, you'd think the world was coming to an end for each and every one of them. If the world was coming to an end for everyone, well, I guess there's nothing to worry about. But we just want to make sure the white rabbits don't get in that mindset or stand a little more aware, look a little more broader picture. Because the whole entire planet can't come to a complete end for everybody. I guess it could if the whole place blows up, but let's be realistic. Iran to send blockade-busting ship to Gaza. Now, this should be interesting. I can't imagine war breaking out before the World Cup is over, and that's like the beginning of July. The Queen is also coming here, coming over to America in the beginning of July, the Queen of England. And believe it or not, she's a big deal. Not necessarily a big deal to me, but she's a big deal. She can put the word out and put a lot of different groups in line. Much more so than the average American thinks, or than the average European, or even the average Asian. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. European royalty. But she's coming to America in some big dog and pony show in the beginning of July, and of course the World Cup ends somewhere in the first couple weeks of July or something like that. So I can't see any big dust off till July, or probably August, late July, something like that. But Iran is sending blockade-busting ship to Gaza. And I would expect another international incident, but never know, maybe not. But obviously there's a flare-up, and it's going to keep flaring up. The trend is toward war. There'll be a war. U.S.-Israeli warships in Suez may be prelude to face off with war. This is IsraeliNationalNews.com. Interesting piece talking about all these different ships, but I've already talked about this, all these different ships coming in and all this different stuff going on. I don't know what's going to happen. It's not if, it's when. And it looks like, soon. I was asked directly about World War III. Some of you have done some research on World War III. There's nothing. If you Google or Yahoo World War III, you're going to see statements about World War III going back a long ways. And I'm talking about a lot longer than 100 years. There's been several different variations. The one that our race would have the most to fear from is would be if our enemy, even in a what you see is what you get sense, because obviously they're in cahoots. If, let's say, our enemy controlled Russia, well, that would be something to concern themselves with. If they control the top of America and top of Russia, that's a World War III that the white rabbits would not want to see. That would not be good for us. That's a dicey situation. The World War III, if it's inevitable that you would want to see Russia and Germany working together, and we've already talked about this a million times, and you would want to see different groups in America fomenting all kinds of trouble and working with them as well, kind of wide sky. We've talked about this as well. And the fact that America continues to work with Russia on all different sorts of issues. I expect to see all kinds of political drama as well, like with this general. One of the most interesting pieces was the American Spectator, the coming resignation of Barack Obama, and it talked about all kinds of different problems going on behind the scenes. It's kind of interesting. You can look it up by Peter Ferrara. But it wouldn't surprise me. Nothing would surprise me right now, basically, in regards to political machinations before this World War III. But the situation that we're seeing shape up isn't necessarily bad for us. We just got to survive. It's going to be bad for a lot of others on this planet. And in the short term, I expect a lot of discomfort, but we just got to kind of roll with the punches and do the work in front of us, which is a consistent message. Expose our white rabbit genocide. But of course, Russia is over here. Medvedev is over in Silicon Valley, looking at Silicon Valley, signing deals with Cisco Systems, talking about what they're building in Russia, the Silicon Valley in Russia, and different firms are within America are shaping up to help the Russians as well as the Germans behind the scenes. And not even really behind the scenes, it's pretty much in front of everyone's faces. Obviously, if he comes over to Silicon Valley, he's talking to Twitter and he's talking to different groups there. Talking to different groups there, there's a lot going on between Russia and America. A lot more than meets the eyes. A lot more than meets the eye. And I expect that to go forward, and I think that's a good thing in front of this war. There's also a missile deal that Russia and America have signed, some type of missile deal. And the Obama president, they got on their backs about that. But this is going on, this trend of America behind the scenes working with Russia more and more, and the Russian-German axis. And I'm going to read an extensive piece from Stratfor put out an interesting piece, and it's about time that they are talking about some upcoming developments within Europe and the Germans and the Russians. I'm going to read it in a bit because it's so good. Of course, it's a year. They probably should have put it out a year, year and a half, 2 years ago. But you know, not everyone's up to speed. I mean, this stuff's been a long time coming. Dr. Farrell, God bless him, Dr. Joseph Farrell, Nazi International, rolls out a lot of this stuff. And actually, when the Berlin Wall comes down, he talks about different groups being formed. This stuff goes back a long, long ways. But everyone's jockeying into this World War III in some way, shape, matter, or form. And I expect it to be big, and you know, it goes back a long ways, but there's several different variations. I can only tell you the variation that I prefer to see that'll be best for our race. Not that war is good for anybody, but if the gods have determined that there's going to be World War III, then by all means let it help the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, because World War I and World War II sure as hell did not. Right. So anyways, Medvedev is over in Silicon Valley talking to different tech leaders in America. And tech is a pretty interesting thing. And you can look at Russia Land's Silicon Valley deal in the Wall Street Journal. And he's over here and there's been a lot over the past couple years go on between Russia and the Anglo-American elite, and there's two sites. There are these, we'll call it the real Americans behind the scenes, some of them, some of the last holdouts, some of the groups looking to come to power, some of the groups that maybe took back over JP Morgan in the last 10 years, and some of the different groups that are working with the Germans, and then there's the Anglo-American elite that's going down, and that would include the actual British and some of the Australian as well as some Americans that are in a lot of trouble, and that would definitely include the Jewish elites. Jewish elites would be in the latter group. And Medvedev, of course, contradicted himself recently. You know, a lot of people are asking me about this. He promotes the ruble to lessen dollar dominance. He promotes these regional-based currencies, and Putin has done this too, a new reserve currency. Well, last year, let's go back to an old news event on Bloomberg. Medvedev shows off sample coin, a new world currency at G8. And this was a global currency, a coin that he was showing at where was this at here? He was a United Future World Currency. And he was in Italy at the Group of Eight Nations, and he was showing this thing off. Why is he showing that off if he's talking regional currencies? I mean, even right now he's talking regional currencies. So what was he doing a year ago, July 10th, 2009, showing a global currency? Well, he was fooling with them. It said unity and diversity and everything on it. But obviously he's not advocating global currency now. So what was he doing then? He shows a one world currency a year ago, and now he's fooling around with them. Now he's talking about regional currencies and, you know, all this type of stuff. It's just kind of interesting, all these games being played. But Russians continue to poke their eyes into some of Anglo-American elites. And now, of course, the Brits are getting very upset over it. the Brits are getting very, very upset over it. America always tried to do down Brittany. Talks about Mail Online. This is Joffrey Wheatcroft. Talked about how the BP disaster is being used by elements in America to really harm Britain. And, of course, no one wants to see the British people be harmed. No one wants to see the average English child get harmed. But there are knives out for elements of the Anglo elites. I've talked about this so much before, especially the Jewish elites, the Jew rabbits and those allied with them. And it's one big alliance. I call them pink rabbit banksters and elitesters, but the knives are out for them. And it is an interesting piece. Look it up. And he talks about how this BP disaster is being used to really harm them. And it's tragic that all the innocent people have to get in the way when these groups go at it. And it has. The knives have come out. And I'm going to, let's see here. Miliband, here's another interesting news event from London. Miliband, of course, David Miliband, he's a foreign secretary. He lost his attempt to block this Mohammed torture case evidence. It's going forward, which is pretty interesting because you'd think the neocon, they would cover for him in London, but they can't anymore. Yeah, they've been sold out, and things are backing up, and the knives are coming out, and they're going after underlings and everything else. All you have to do is see it piling up. But I thought that was an interesting thing that David Miliband, the big neocon Jew rabbit, he loses an attempt. The Mohammed torture case evidence. It's a big deal because he could be in a lot of trouble. And it all has to do with international law and everything else. But when it comes to the BP oil spill, let's look at the headlines. The Telegraph, UK, oil spill, Russian President Dmitry Medvedev fears BP's annihilation. And that's pretty hurtful to a stock if you have a Russian president who knows a little bit about oil. Pretty much the most dominant oil country in the world right now. They can dictate policy. The Arabs really don't have any power over oil, not near as much as Russians, because the Arabs aren't independent. They have elements of the Anglo elite telling them what to do with their oil. But he talks about BP's annihilation. Interesting piece, and we can go back. Trouble brewing for BP in Russia. This is June 8, 2010, and it talks about basically Russia's using this as a way to take back over their joint venture or many other things. The Russians have always had it in for BP ever since BP was, in their minds, used to loot the country partially, and they're right. So let's jump back in time a few couple years and let's talk about this. July 2nd, 2008, Russia holding British Petroleum hostage. And this is on BNet. It's basically an industry. I guess it's some type of energy industry website, but it's industry.bnet.com. And it's Russia holding British Petroleum hostage by David Phillips, July 2nd, 2008. And it talks about this big brouhaha between Russia and BP and their TNK BP, their joint venture. And even now, let's see the Reuters piece. Russia wants clarity on impact of oil spill on BP. Russia wants guarantees from BP that its Russian joint venture will not be affected by the cost of cleaning up the Gulf oil spill. Russia and BP have historically went at it over the past since Putin came into power, and they've took back a lot, and they BP, of course, felt slighted that they weren't allowed to run around and do whatever they wanted to, or elements of BP are. Obviously, British Petroleum is a big company with a lot of people, but they go at it through these companies, and BP is just getting pummeled, to say the least. I mean, they are just getting punished right, left, and center. Russia's using this as an advantage. Elements in Anglo-America are using this advantage. German elements are using this advantage. And this is all, in my opinion, German soft power. Yeah, when you talk about Russia doing stuff, or when you talk about the elements of Anglo, believe it or not, it's German soft power. It's hard to believe, but that's what it is. German soft power is not necessarily German in Germany, but everything's shaping into this World War III and what they have set up afterwards. But they're just pile driving on BP, right, left, and center, and that's, of course, the big company, and especially Anglosphere, especially the United Kingdom. And it hurts. It hurts, and it's tragic to see a lot of innocent white rabbits get hurt in the middle of this, but I've talked about these groups going at it. And the Jew Rabbit Elitesters, the Pink Rabbit Banksters and Elitesters, especially the Jew Rabbits, there's a section of them that are going down, and the knives are out for them. And if you're in the way, you're going to get a knife in you, too. That's just the way it works. It doesn't matter whether it's your pension or anything else. And it is ugly stuff. And, of course, crossing over, before I talk about the Strat 4 news, what's supposed to be news, actually, about German, it's about German soft power, actually, indirectly. And before I talk about this and our rabbit hole, one of our rabbit holes shaping up in Northern Europe, before I read this to you, I'm going to talk about U.S. identifies vast mineral riches in Afghanistan, $1 trillion worth of untapped mineral deposits, and it has a particular type of mineral, lithium, which, of course, lithium is used by a great deal of technology nowadays. And what they wanted to do was they wanted to go out with a new natural resource-based currency. You remember, you're still dealing with conflict and scarcity. And wherever there's scarcity, there's going to be conflict. And they wanted to keep that economic system alive. But having a currency backed by oil doesn't make any sense anymore. They got to roll out new energy systems. They got to get some other stuff going. So they were talking about doing a currency backed in something like lithium, which modern technology needs. You know, it's kind of like instead of having something backed in oil, you have something backed in lithium. But again, who owns a lithium? You see the whole challenge here. You're dealing with another scarce resource or a potential scarce resource and tying a currency to it. You're dealing with the potential difference between private central banks, which loan money into circulation, loan money, and a public central bank like China, which issues true currency into circulation. One is debt-free. The other is always prone to debt problems. And we're going to talk about this more in a future episode. I'm going to go over some stuff in Banksters from Here to Babylon, but it's interesting that this is really where they were going to go, and the challenges are way out of time. They got upended. They got upended. And we'll do our part on our half, won't we? We'll do our little part on the street levels and with White Rabbit Genocide, but they've been hurt. But that's what they were going to go with. A private central bank currency of some sort, backed by lithium or something. You get the picture. Anyone that's listened to the show, I talked about the difference between public and private central banks, and there's a big difference. Big difference between loan and money and issuing a true currency. Yeah. But that's what they wanted to come up with, and another delicate scheme. Something that would maybe go a little bit longer term, maybe even 300 years, you know, a global currency backed by lithium. It was because modern technology needs lithium. It's something like that, you know, another currency based on scarce resource. But again, it's another concept of scarcity. White rabbits don't do scarcity, we do abundance. So not having a true currency issued by a public central bank doesn't make any sense. They're always talking about currencies and the gold standard, but gold, of course, is another scarce resource. You know, America was founded, the currency was backed by the full faith and the inventiveness of the actual American people. In China right now, you got a public central bank. It's basically, the currency is backed by the ingenuity of the Chinese people, the work ethic of the Chinese people. And Hitler in the Third Reich, he copied the founding fathers, and he's another one that throughout the private central banks and issued himself a true currency backed by the efforts of his own people. The currency wasn't backed by gold, it wasn't backed by lithium, it wasn't backed by any scarce resource other than the most precious resource in the world, the white rabbits. And that did just fine. But it's an interesting deal. And you see them trying to pull this stuff time and time again, trying to shape up something, some new scheme. But in the next one, we're going to go into the German-Russian axis and how that's forming. Every once in a while on this show, I read from Strat4, and I read their canned stuff. Their canned stuff, of course, is over-the-counter. You can get it for free, and they put out stuff every once in a while. It's kind of a proxy on some of the over-the-counter Anglo intelligence groups, and some of it's better than others, but it's talking about something that I've watched for years, and of course, of late in the last few years, it's been pretty much impossible to ignore, and that's and the title of this piece is Germany and Russia Move Closer, and it was done on June 22nd by George Friedman. I believe he's the owner of Strat4. And that's strat4.com, STRATFOR. But I'm going to read it and interject. It's a pretty short piece. It talks about Germany and Russia moving closer. German Foreign Minister Guido Westerwelle will brief French and Polish officials on a joint proposal for Russian-European cooperation on security, according to a statement from Westerwelle's spokesman on Monday. The proposal emerged out of talks between German Chancellor Angela Merkel and Russian President Dmitry Medvedev earlier in June and is based on a draft for Russia drew up in 2008. Russia Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov will be present at the meeting. Andreas Peschke says, "We want to further elaborate and discuss it within the triangle, France, Germany, and Poland, in the presence of the Russian foreign minister." On the surface, the proposal developed by Merkel and Medvedev appears primarily structural. It raises security discussions about specific trouble spots to the ministerial level rather than the ambassadorial level, with a committee being formed consisting of EU Foreign Policy Chief Catherine Ashton and Russia's foreign minister. All of this seems rather mild until we consider three things. First, proposals for deepening the relationship between Russia and the European Union have been on the table for several years without much progress. Second, the Germans have taken this initiative at a time when Germany's foreign policy is in a state of flux. And third, the decision to take this deal to France and Poland indicates that the Germans are extremely sensitive to the geopolitical issues involved, which are significant and complex. Now, let me interject here. This stuff has been on the table for eons. It's been talked about for eons. The companies are putting together. All the different parties involved know what's going on. The Pope has talked about it. I mean, all these different parties are talking about it. The idea that it hasn't had much progress. It hasn't had much formal progress in so much that they haven't announced it and started running around hugging each other and everything else, but they've been setting it up, and it's just a trend in motion. If you wait for the big torchlight parades, it's probably already went past your house. That's when you look at this type of thing. But by the time Stratfor sees it come together, it's probably already together, and it's just a formality. But the Germans have been sneaky not to alert elements of the Anglo elites, and elements of the Anglo elites have been sneaky not to alert elements of the Anglo elites, because this is the grapes of wrath. And there are elements in France and Poland that are anxious about it. They're dealing with there's 17th century nationalism still, and 19th century nationalism. And there's also elements of German soft power in France and Poland, which knows it's in their best interest as well. And so let's continue reading. Reconsidering basic strategy. The economic crisis in Europe has caused the Germans, among others, to reconsider their basic strategy. And basically, it's created a problem. That problem gets a reaction. The Germans are implementing a solution. Ever since World War II, the Germans have pursued two national imperatives. The first was to maintain close relationships with the French, along with the rest of Europe, to eliminate the threat of war. Germany had fought three wars with France since 1870. Its primary goal was not to fight another one. Its second goal was prosperity. Germany's memory of the Great Depression, plus its desire to avoid militarism, made it obsessed with economic development and creating a society focused on prosperity. It saw the creation of an integrated economic structure in Europe as achieving both ends, tying Germany into an unbreakable relationship with France and at the same time creating a trading bloc that would ensure prosperity. Events since the financial crisis of 2008 have shaken German confidence in the EU as an instrument of prosperity. Until 2008, Europe had undergone an extraordinary period of prosperity in which West Germany could simultaneously integrate with East Germany and maintain its long-term economic growth. The European Union appeared to be a miraculous machine that automatically generated prosperity and political stability alongside it. After 2008, this perception changed, and the sense of insecurity accelerated with the current crisis in Greece and among the Mediterranean members of the EU. The Germans found themselves underwriting what they regarded as a Greek prolificacy to protect the euro and European economy. This has not only generated significant opposition to among the German public, it raised questions about the German government. The purpose of the EU was to ensure German prosperity. If the future of Europe was Germany shoring up Europe, in other words, transferring wealth from Germany to Europe, then the rationale for European integration became problematic. The Germans were certainly not prepared to abandon European integration, which had given Germany 65 years of peace. At the same time, the Germans were prepared to consider adjustments to the framework in which Europe was operating, particularly from an economic standpoint. A Europe in which German prosperity is at risk from the budgeting practices of Greece needed adjustment. And let me interject. The Germans have basically used their manufacturing to dominate the EU at very low cost. It didn't cost them anything. Now that it's starting to cost them something, they're going to withdraw from the strategy. And basically, if you go back into books and books like Nazi International and some of Dr. Farrell's, the different German quotes coming out of World War II, the different German quotes when the Berlin Wall came down, that the EU was being used as a cloaking device. Coming into the events you're witnessing, really. And Germany had hid its intentions within the EU and had a totally different agenda. And they've been plugging this line for quite some time, that the EU wasn't working for Germany and that they're going to make amends or they're going to be doing something different. And let's continue reading. The pull of Russia. In looking at their real economic interests, the Germans were inevitably withdrawn to the relationship with Russia. Russia supplies Germany with nearly 40% of their natural gas, of the natural gas Germany uses. And I'll interject real quick. The Anglos have always wanted Germany to diversify its energy resources. And what we've seen under Gerhard Schroeder is not a diversification of its energy resources, but basically creating a huge problem by making it totally energy dependent on Russia. Which, of course, is a good thing. As long as you're energy dependent on Russia, you have an excuse not to tick them off. You have an excuse not. You always have an excuse to do business with them. So we'll continue reading. Without Russian energy, Germany's economy is in trouble. At the same time, Russia needs technology and expertise to develop its economy away from being simply an exporter of primary commodities. Moreover, the Germans already have thousands of enterprises that invest in Russia. I'm going to repeat that. Germans have thousands of enterprises that invest in Russia. Finally, in the long run, Germany's population is declining below the level needed to maintain its economy. It does not want to increase immigration into Germany. I'm going to repeat that. It does not want to increase immigration to Germany because of fears of social instability. Russia's population is also falling, but it still has a surplus population relative to its economic needs and will continue to have one for quite a while. German investment in Russia also allows Germany to get the labor it needs without resorting to immigration by moving production facilities east to Russia. The Germans have been developing economic relations with Russia since before the Soviet collapse, but the Greek crisis forced them to reconsider their relationship with Russia. If the European Union was becoming a trap in which Germany was going to constantly subsidize the rest of Europe and the self-contained economy is impossible, then another strategy would be needed. It consists of two parts. First was insisting on a restructuring of the European Union to protect Germany from domestic policies of other countries. Second, if Europe was heading toward a long period of stagnation, then Germany, heavily dependent on exports and needing labor, needed to find an additional partner, if not a new one. They're basically, Germany's using this problem to basically get Russia closer to the EU, and they're disguising it as Russia closer to the EU instead of what it is, Russia closer to Germany. In reality, it's all of the above, but the rest of the Europe knows it's a Russian-German axis forming. And Italy's kind of in there as well, but Russian-German axis is forming, and what Germany's doing is selling it to the rest of Europe it's actually a Russian-Europe axis. It's kind of interesting. At the same time, a German-Russian alignment is a security issue as well as an economic issue. Between 1871 and 1941, there was a three-player game in continental Europe, France, Germany, and Russia. The three shifted alliances with each other, and each shift increasing the chance of war. In 1871, Prussia was allied with Russia when it attacked France. In 1914, the French and the Russians were allied against Germany. In 1940, Germany was allied with Russia when it attacked France. The three-player game itself played itself out in various different ways with a constant outcome, war. The last thing Brazil wants is a return to that dynamic. Instead, its hope is to integrate Russia in the European security system, or at least give it a sufficient stake in the European economic system that Russia does not seek to challenge the European security system. This immediately affects French relations with Russia. For Paris, partnership with Germany is a foundation of France's security policy and economy. If France moves into close security and economic relationship with Russia, if Germany moves into close security and economic relationship with Russia, France must calculate the effect this will have on France. There has never been a time when a tripartite alliance of France, Germany, and Russia has worked because it has always left France as a junior partner. Therefore, it is vital for the Germans to present this not as a three-way relationship, but as an inclusion of Russia into Europe and to focus on the security measures rather than economic measures. Nevertheless, the Germans have to be enormously careful in managing the relationship with France. Even more delicate is the question of Poland. Poland is caught between Russia and Germany, and that's never a good place to be. Its history has been that of division between these two countries or conquest by one. This is a burning issue in the Polish psyche. A closer relationship with Germany, between Germany and Russia, inevitably will generate primordial fears of disaster in Poland. Therefore, Wednesday's meeting with so-called triangular group is essential. Both the French and the Poles, the Poles with great intensity must understand what is happening. The issue is partly the extent to which it affects Germany's commitments to EU, and other part, crucial to Poland, is what this does to Germany's NATO commitments. The NATO angle. It is noteworthy that the Russians emphasize that what is happening poses no threat to NATO. Russia is trying to calm not only Poland, but also the United States. The problem, however, is this. If Germany and Europe have a security relationship that requires prior consultation and cooperation, then Russia inevitably has a hand in NATO. If the Russians oppose a NATO action, Germany and other European states will be faced between a choice between Russia and NATO. To put it more bluntly, if Germany enters into a cooperative security arrangement with Russia, forgetting the rest of Europe for a moment, then how does it handle its relationship with the United States and the Russians and the Americans are at loggerheads in countries like Georgia? The Germans and the Russians both view the United States as a constantly and inconveniently pressured them both to take risk in areas where they feel they have no interest. NATO may not be functional in any real sense, but the U.S. pressure is ever present. The Germans and Russians acting together would be in a better position to deflect this pressure than standing alone. Intriguingly, part of the German-Russian talks relates to a specific security matter, the issue of Moldova and Transdniestria. I don't even know if I pronounced that correctly. Moldova is a region between Romania and Ukraine, which joins Russia and has reentered the Russian sphere of influence, and at various times has been part of both. It became independent after a collapse of communism. Moldova's eastern region, Transdniestria, broke away from Moldova under Russian sponsorship following a change in government in 2009. It was one of those many color revolutions Russia's were rolling into in 2009. I didn't actually cover it because it was so small. Moldova sees itself as pro-Western, but Moldova's eastern region, Transnistria, broke away from Moldova under Russian sponsorship. Following a change in government in 2009, Moldova sees itself as pro-Western, while Transnistria is pro-Russia. The Russians have supported Transnistria's status as a breakaway area and have troops stationed there, while Moldova has insisted on its return. It's kind of like one of those little cat-and-mouse games, but Russia has been on such a roll, and this is me interjecting, across that whole area. I haven't never went into Transnistria because it was... It's just another case of Russia taking over that whole entire area, including the Ukraine, on some level. Whether it's wide sky or what you see is what you get. The memorandum between Merkel and Medvedev specifically pointed to the impact a joint security relationship might have on this dispute. The kind of solution that may be considered is unclear. But if the issue goes forward, the outcome will give the first indication of what a Russian-German security relationship would look like. The Poles will be particularly interested, as any effort in Moldova will automatically impact both Romania and Ukraine, two states key to determining Russia's strength in the region. Whatever way the solution tilts will define the power relationship among the three. In my opinion, Romania and Ukraine are already decided, because that whole area is already decided. All this stuff is basically a formality. It's a big dog and pony show. It should be remembered that the Germans are proposing a Russian security relationship with Europe, not a Russian security relationship with Germany alone. And let me interject, that's very smart. At the same time, it should be remembered that it is the Germans taking the initiative to open talks by unilaterally negotiating with Russians and taking their agreements to other European countries. It is also important to note that they have not taken this to all the European countries but France and Poland first, with French President Nicolas Sarkozy voicing his initial approval on June 19th, and equally important, they have not publicly brought it to the United States, nor is it clear what the Germans might do if the French and the Poles reject the relationship, which is not inconceivable. The Germans do not want to lose the European concept. At the same time, they are trying to redefine it more to their advantage. We don't care about your politics. We have our own agenda. From the German point of view, bringing Russia into the relationship would help achieve this, but the Germans still have to explain what the relationship is to the rest of Europe, particularly their financial obligations to troubled economies in the Eurozone. And they also have to define their relationship to NATO, more important to the United States. Like any country, Germany can have many things, but can't have everything. The ideal that it would meld the European Union, NATO, and Russia into one system relationships without alienating at least some of their partners, some intensely, is naive. The Germans are not naive. They know that the Poles will be terrified and the French uneasy. The southern Europeans will feel increasingly abandoned as Germany focuses on the northern European plain. The United States watching Germany and Russia draw closer will be seeing an alliance of enormous weight developing that might threaten its global interests. With this proposal, the Germans are looking to change the game significantly. They are moving slowly and with plenty of room to retreat, but they are moving. It will be interesting to hear what the Poles and French say on Wednesday. Their public support should not be taken for anything more than not wanting to alienate the Germans and the Russians until they have talked to the Americans. It will also be interesting to see what the Obama administration has to say about this. I expected these events long, long ago. What's happening is the big public dog and pony show. Public dog and pony shows happen when something's already pretty much been done or agreed on, and they're just moving into position, or there's still a lot of clueless people on what's really going on. Obviously it leaves a lot of questions in the air. What exactly are the Germans and the Russians planning? Well, they're planning a clean break, and I'm guessing elements in the Anglo-American elite are well in on it. Look at what's going on over here. As far as their cooperation on certain military matters and certain, nothing huge, but it's all the little things. It's all those little things. And this is all coming into this war. And I think it's just the rest of Europe is catching on, and most of the world is catching on to trends that have been in place a long, long time. They're just kind of like bringing it out in the open and springing it on them, and this is how it's going to be. But what it looks like to me is that German soft power is meeting in a variety of different countries and deciding basically how to approach the announcement or whatever. But it's pretty much, when it comes to business investments, when it comes to energy investments, this has been a done deal. It's just a matter of, and I'm curious to see exactly how it all springs into formation, exactly how NATO gets rear-ended and thrown in the back burner, and how exactly some of the different Anglo elites take it, but there's nothing really anyone can do about it. If Germany's just being nice, cloaking it behind European ambitions, or Europe's relationship with Russia in reality, they don't have to do that right now. They have enough power within Poland, and they have enough power within France to force it down their throats. But that's not advantageous. It's advantageous to put the dog and pony show on. And let's not forget that the Germans and the French were busy digging up Babylon when we went in there and to oust Saddam Hussein, not even 10 years ago. This is the second time, the real time, when George W. Bush went in there and ousted Saddam Hussein. The Germans and the French have always have a lot going on some level. You can see them working together, and they always have elements there, always have different points of view and everything else. Germany and Poland has always been a little more contentious, at least of late, because Poland, of course, is stationing, is always looking to some imperial past. They want this big Polish empire. And, of course, there's nothing they can do about Germany taking back whole sections of their country if they wanted to. I can imagine many of the old Polish nationalists being very uneasy about this, but it's the future. The future is not necessarily the future is not the past. But I see this as an inevitable process. This is just basically a big dog and pony show, a continuation of what's been going on a long, long time behind the scenes. It's pretty obvious that they're working together, and they're getting ready to can a whole group of individuals, a whole group of the Pink Rabbit banksters and leasers. It's just how big this goes and exactly what it looks like. You're not in normal time, so I wouldn't expect any normal measures. And of course, I will keep you attuned. But it's pretty much becoming what you see is what you get. That something's going on between the Germans and the Russians, a little more than anyone thinks. And that's pretty much all we're going to be talking about on the German-Russian axis, as well as the news. And I'm going to throw in a piece here. We've decided, based on the success of the podcast, that we're going to introduce another element, and that's a consistent image. Or an image. Take one of the out of most of you, many of you have hit an avatar or a little link to come to my site, and you've seen a rabbit, or you've seen eyes, or you've seen a pink rabbit, or a green goddess, and many have seen the different images on the website. Many have been attracted to that, or some just heard the voice on Stormfront, or some one of your friends told you about it. But by and large, an image is basically one of the basics, a consistent image. And we basically got together and picked one of the images based on the success of the podcast. And under what we consider success, under objective measure, and that's subversion. and in the next piece, I'm going to talk about this this consistent image, and I'm going to talk about subversive imagery a little bit. And I'm going to talk about the image that we want you to get out at the local level in a variety of different ways. And it's pretty simple. It's the easiest part of practical politics. All you do is wear it. All you do is use it. All you do is put a sticker on something. All you do is print it out and put it on something. And we'll talk more about it. We'll talk more about it in the coming piece, but it's the easiest thing to do. It is also the most devious. It's the most feared, the most hated in some instances. It can be the most deceptive, the most subversive. Images are pretty much everything. You know, you can't unsee something. Every single day we sit around and say, where did I see that before? I wish I wouldn't have seen that. And that's another game we're going to be playing. We're going to increase our exposure a little bit. And we'll go into that, and I'll go into that with you in the next one. And of course, participation is voluntary. Is always volunteered, but we're going to go into images and into subversive images, and I'm going to talk about some of the success that we, being you, being us, have achieved with this particular podcast in one particular area, and what the next step would be. And this is probably the easiest thing. It's one of the most difficult things to talk about, because people assume that the subversive images is the overwhelming amount of heroes in the movies that are Jewish and black. In America, in the American movie industry, all the heroes are either Jewish or black or both. And all the villains are blonde-haired, blue-eyed guys. And all the news broadcasters have blonde women with one black rabbit. It's kind of funny, but most people think that's subversive, and it is. But the most dangerous ones, the ones that actually are the most lethal, are a lot more subversive. There's a lot more subversive images in the media than something that blatant. Anytime you go that blatant with a white rabbit, you're next over with. Because that's way too over the top. But the type of things they did back in the 60s that were way more subtle are actually more dangerous, in my opinion. Not that I like any of them. I'm just voicing my two cents. So we're going to talk about a little bit about images and some of our success and where we're going to go on this. Today we're going to interrupt this regular programming, and I'm going to put something in on 45 after we've done the news, and we're going to talk about something that... we're basically going to talk about how to measure the success of, especially this show, how that we're objectively measuring success. It's not necessarily my success, it's our success. And basically, if you notice in the title of the actual podcast, the actual show, is Horus the Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit. And Horus the Avenger is a take off Egyptian mythology. And Follow the White Rabbit is, of course, a take off, a common phrase in the English language from Alice in Wonderland, and became famous again in the movie The Matrix. And these are big sayings in popular culture. Basically, what we're doing with this is we're taking one out of mythology and subverting it to our cause. Or as some people say, since it's white, we're taking it back, maybe. We're taking it back. And the others is, of course, something also from Anglo culture, Follow the White Rabbit, and we're subverting it to our cause. These are very common phrases. If I talk about Horus the Avenger, many people have heard of something like that. Follow the White Rabbit, most people have definitely heard of. but we are basically subverting it to white rabbit genocide. And that is a height of subversion. We also came out with some other basic new phrases. Eurorabbit. For instance, if you Google, if you Yahoo, if you Scroogle Eurorabbit, EuroRabbit, you're going to find our Twitter right at the top. Because we got these little Twitter rabbits, Twitter white rabbits, I call them, and they go nuts with the mantra. They go nuts with different phrases from the show. They go nuts on Twitter. I don't know how they're doing it, but they've become, it only takes a handful of them. One is called Wake White Rabbit, and it is distinctly racial. Others do it along with their other Twitters. Tweet our stuff, however that works, because I don't have a lot of followers, but yet I do. You know, but that's a good example of what's driving that. Now, that's been done with no search engine optimization. That's been done with just raw taking a term, which is distinctly new, Eurorabbit, and making it our own, and letting a process take over. That if it's successful, it should work, and it should show up in the search engines, or show up quite high. White rabbit genocide. If you look up white rabbit genocide, you will find us. I don't care what search engine you're on. But of course, those are distinctly ours. Those are new. Horace the Avenger and Follow the White Rabbit are very old. One way older than the other. One is a popular phrase from Alice in Wonderland, 100 years old, made famous again by The Matrix 10 years ago or 15 years ago, whenever it was. And the other is thousands of years old. We resurrected that in our fight against the Red Hippopotamus, which is interesting. And it impressed me in ancient Egypt that they had no hesitation when the Hyksos claimed Set as their highest god. They resurrected Horus the Avenger and brought that out as a tool and rallied against him. I thought that was fast. The pharaoh's name was Ahmose, Ahmose. And, of course, I don't know if exactly I'm pronouncing it correctly, but he had a famous child that went on after him, and that's Amenhotep. And, of course, they resurrected the Horus the Avenger and went after those Hyksos and that famous capital of theirs, Avaris, and that's where in the English language we get the word avarice. I should tell you something about those, and he kicked them out of there. And they ended up over there in... I believe he drove most of them all the way to what we think of as modern-day Jerusalem. Go figure. But anyways, we've used this phrase, and one of the keys of subversion is whether or not you're getting into the search engines or people are looking for you. Are your show growing? Is it achieving any of its objectives? And not only getting the message out there, but you know, how it's operating in the search engines, because obviously we're trying to subvert these key phrases. And if you Google or you Yahoo Horus the Avenger, you're going to find it. You're going to find us. You're not going to find your Afrocentric Egyptologist. You're going to find us. You hit images, you're going to see my red hippopotamus, even on Google. As funny as that is. And that's been done with no search engine optimization. It's just raw subversion. Basically putting out something, hitting the right audiences, and then letting them do their little fingers do the walking. Little rabbit paws start looking us up. And something like this spreads word of mouth because we don't advertise. You advertise for us. And that's been a great example of subversion, which is, some say unprecedented, because no one's really taking, or no one's actually tried. There's been no one definitely in the racialist community that I know of that's tried to subvert popular phrases back to something racial. But that's been an interesting process most of you aren't aware of, because I haven't made you aware of it. But that has been extremely successful. Now, Follow the White Rabbit has also been successful. On Google, if you go to Google and you hit up Follow the White Rabbit, we're going to be at the bottom of the first page, at the top of the second page. Some days it varies, but generally in that area. That's with no search engine optimization. No one's fooling around with anything. No one's paying anyone for search engine optimization. We don't. It's just raw subversion. It's a great proxy of, because obviously if we're not doing something right, it ain't going to work. There's no point in going forward. You're going to have to redo the message. And we're not trying to necessarily sell anything other than ideals and the mantra and white rabbit genocide. So it's kind of unconventional, but subversion is generally unconventional anyways. But if you go up and you search Google Images for Follow the White Rabbit, it doesn't matter whether you get to this. It's usually the second, third, fourth page. You're going to start seeing our images. You're going to see a handful of them, generally. We get lots of hits from that, random hits, believe it or not. So it has been brilliant. And, of course, in Scroogle, we end up on the first page for actually on the first page of Follow the White Rabbit. Most of our people that come to us either come through Google, Scroogle, or Yahoo. Yahoo's a big search engine and for us for some reason, because if you hit Follow the White Rabbit, you're going to find us on the first page right at the top. And that's for the most popular, one of the most popular phrases in the English language. Follow the White Rabbit, very common. We also are usually in the first, sometimes in the first page, the first two, three pages, several different images on Yahoo. That is a measure of success when it comes to subversion. It's kind of unprecedented for something like this, but I didn't do it. You did it. Pat yourself on the back. But that is the art of subversion. Taking something very common, but making it your own, and it is hated, it is feared, it is money in the bank. Others would argue that I'm simply taking this back. I mean, it's ours to begin with. It's white to begin with. What's more white than a white rabbit? What's more racial than pop culture, than popular culture, especially going back a few thousand years in Egypt, or going back 100 years in Anglosphere? But that's been extremely successful. Most of you are unaware of that. And some of the topics, you know, white rabbit genocide, obviously that's unique. That's something that we own outright. Certain phrases, if you put Horus with Follow the White Rabbit, we're going to be right there, obviously. Many of you find us that way. But that's been done with no search engine optimization. I don't have a problem with search engine optimization. It's just when you start doing stuff like that heavy duty, you can't have a proxy on how successful are we. Not driving hits, not driving visitors, but getting people on message. Yeah. I measure success not through Alexa rankings. I found out long ago that the white nationalist media, which was the first probably to be introduced to this site, is so dominant across the board that if you put out something decent at all, whether it be on a blog or in a blog format or your own independent website and a podcast, you can drive Alexa ratings just off feeding off that traffic that comes through under those particular topics for white nationalism or paleoconservatism or anything they want are interested in reading. They're all over the place. Stormfront is huge. Some of these different sites are huge. Occidental Dissent is a site we're attached to and they're growing. Even the political cesspool and the different conservative broadcasts, they're growing leaps and bounds, paleoconservative. So if you attach yourself to that, I found very quickly that if I put out more recordings in a given month, I'd bounce in Alexa ratings from anywhere from a million to a few hundred thousand to 200,000. If I were to add comments, I could jack it up. That's not a very good proxy. For me, it is for others, other than to say that the media is dominant. What was a good proxy is successful subversion, because that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. We're taking very common phrases, we're making them our own. We're taking buzzwords and being able to hit at that, and people instantly know what you're talking about, but they don't. They don't. It allows you to pry a little deeper. That is an art form. It's not necessarily a science, it's an art form, and you have been very effective at getting the message out. You know, you can lead the rabbits to the carrot patch, but they got to eat. They got to want to eat it. They got to like it. And of course, when it comes to the different Alexa ratings, what's important is how many new listeners are coming on in any given month. How many new listeners are coming through the program any given month? Are we reaching out to another audience? And of course, that has happened as well. Because the only thing bigger organic audience than the white nationalists or the white racialist struggle would be the alternative news and media, what I used to call conspiracy media, the Rents.coms, are epic and huge. And they started at the same time. The internet came out the same time. The Rents.com started at the same time. They started the same way. The difference is they made money. Now, Jeff Rentz and Rentz.com has showed their colors. They put up the brother Nathaniel Kapner. If you go to Rentz.com, you're going to see Kevin McDonald. You're going to see Dr. David Duke. And Dr. David Duke, of course, because of this, his site is growing nonstop on Alexa, simply because you're merging, you're fusing the two, the normal, dynamic white nationalist, paleoconservative audience, and now you're mixing alternative news, the groups that want to interested in knowing more about the Jews. I, of course, fuse them outright. I fuse them outright, and I do so intentionally. But in this particular one, we're going to talk about our success, because success requires planning, where failure doesn't. Yeah, failure, you got to go back to the drawing board and bring out something new, or try to get your message out a different way. The reason I'm talking to you to begin with is because the message wasn't getting out there in a way that it should be. And also that, you know, obviously I observe trends geopolitically. I am extremely macro. And also I'm a pretty good observer of cultural trends. It's what I like to do. And of course, I use my the listeners as a guinea pig for a cartoon that I want to bring out, and different concepts dealing with the type of white rabbit psychology and ecology, and using rabbits instead of directly talking about race, talking about it through a medium of using animals, which is incredibly effective, we found. But generally speaking, we want a measure of success. We want to, once you measure success, you've got to take the next step. And there's one basic that I've never introduced you to. It's the only basic I've never introduced you to. Not that it wasn't time, not that it wasn't in front of you, and that's consistent images. This show, and it's a very simple basic, but you can't unsee something. Yeah, most of the time our race has been hurt not through what they've heard, but first what we see. And there's been a slow, gradual, what most call subversion. I call it a perversion, because they're not really subverting. Well, it is subversion, but it ends up being full-blown perversion, and that is the basically by and large the Jewish media. but basically. Images are extremely violent. They can also be extremely beautiful. Our race is heavily affected by modern media. Our race is heavily affected by images we see. Others have speculated on the reason. There is a biological reason, I'm sure of it. But it was always common sense to me that if you invent something and someone else grabs a hold of it, you might be affected worse than other parts of your rabbit manatee, we'll call it. Other parts of the rabbit kingdom. If the indigenous white rabbits invented movies, well, obviously they're going to be affected by it. They invented it. You know, we invented cameras, so obviously we're going to be affected by these big, shiny pictures. And they do. You know, many of you have come to my website not necessarily because you're interested in what we had to say. You saw a title you've seen before, and you saw a picture that you thought was cute or you thought was not like anything you've ever seen from this type of media, and that's the whole ideal. But consistent image is a basic. It's something that you've seen all your life. You've seen a subversive use of symbolism, a subversive use of all kinds of things, and a perverted use of all kinds of things. Every day we say to ourselves, you know, I wish I wouldn't have saw that. Or maybe about every other day you say, where did I see that before? Yeah, it's very provocative when you get into the use of symbolism, the use of color, the use of logos. It's also very controversial. They're topics you don't hear talked about a great deal. But in this next little bit, I'm going to talk about a consistent image I brought bring it out. Out of all these images we have one image that is more subversive than all the others. It's more subversive because it's more mainstream. You see, the more mainstream we are, the more subversive we become. Most people think that means not shaving your head and not wearing a suit and tie and looking like your dad's conservative or the Republican your granny voted for, or the Democrat your granny voted for. No, not necessarily. What it means is taking a trend in popular culture and making it your own. One of the dominant trends in pop culture has been the use of lightning. They use lightning. They've used lightning off and on going way back, and that is distinctly European. It's kind of like Follow the White Rabbit or Horus the Avenger. These are European concepts, but lightning is distinctly European. You won't see it all over Japan, China necessarily until it shows up in European and American pop culture. They usually adopt stuff from us. But lightning is something that's shown up time and time again post-World War II. And over the past few years, several different brands have used lightning to sell whole lots of products. Brands like Lost Enterprises, the surf brand, which sells a lot of cool t-shirts, they use lightning. That's LOST Enterprises. And I believe it stands for Lost World or Lost Planet. And you can look them up and you'll see what I'm talking about. The Billabongs have been known to use it. The different surf brands have brought it out, inundated the world with lightning. Different use of lightnings. Even websites like, Celeb Buzz, have used lightning. Celebbuzz.com, that's CelebBuzz.com, use lightning right in front of your face. They're using lightning more and more, and that's distinctly European image. And in one of our images, of course, we use a lightning bolt that is reminiscent of World War II, and that's the little white rabbit on the cover, because I came out a white nationalist. I came out, generally, this podcast came down to White Nationalist Avenue. And so the... He has a little German cross on there, and he has a little lightning bolts that are sort of reminiscent of the SS. But most of our images are very mainstream. The reason being is it's more subversive to take a mainstream lightning bolt and subvert it to your purposes than it is to actually take a swastika, which you'll never subvert to your purposes simply because it's too well known. As soon as you walk down the street, you're going to know what they're about. If someone walks down the street with that little white rabbit shirt on, which a lot of people like, old Bob likes his, believe it or not. We're going to talk about old Bob wearing our shirts. But everyone's going to know that it's kind of a Eurocentric image. I did that intentionally. There's nothing wrong with that. The other images are far more subversive. Now, of course, the red hippopotamus and the pink rabbit are subversive because they're dabbling in what is viewed as anti-Semitic propaganda. I don't have a problem with that either. But it's actually the Star of Saturn, but I don't get into arguments about it. It's, you know, they can call it Star David. Now, you know, the Jew rabbis not only think they own the world, they think they own Saturn, but whatever, it goes back to Babylon, believe it or not. But we delve in some stuff there as well. But by and large, when you get into the eyes, just the eyes, the undercover lover image, which is actually called Eyes Forward. That's its official title to my fan, to the listeners of this podcast, or people that like this podcast. That image is Eyes Forward. That image without our website has been picked as the consistent image we're going with. And I'm going to introduce this a little bit more, and we're going to keep talking about this. But consistent images are extremely violent, but not necessarily violent. They're extremely provocative without being provocative. They're subversive at the same time, simply because you don't necessarily know what they're about, and they totally blend in with the mainstream. And do so in an edgy and hip way. No one wants to wear, something that's old news. And at the same time, many of these images are distinctly ours, or distinct to the show, whereas the little rabbit on the cover has something that you would notice from German regalia from World War II. Most of our images don't go down that road. There's no real arguing over the past. In any of the images, I wanted something distinctly distinct for White Rabbit Genocide and our particular mantra and this particular struggle, what we're trying to do. But a consistent image is something you've seen introduced time and time again, and we're just simply playing off in every campaign you've seen, in every branding, in every everything you go to has some type of image they're projecting. It has some type of logo. It has a certain set of symbols, and we're just playing off this trend in popular culture yet again. Not of Follow the White Rabbit, but of lightning and all the different groups that have went out of their way to plant lightning bolts all over the place. Electric sunglasses, had some really cool t-shirts that were huge sellers last year, all with lightning on them. The Electric Bloodsucker had two lightning bolts as eyes. They were yellow lightning bolt eyes of some type, and it looked like a big mouth with a big vampire, like one vampire tooth, and it was called Electric Bloodsucker, and it was a pretty wild t-shirt, but a big seller. And so last summer I paid attention to this type of thing, and that's where I went with the popular culture lightning, a lightning takeoff popular culture. But at the same time, it is distinctly ours. But the images with the two eyes, the eyes forward with no website, is what has been chosen as our consistent image. Consistent image is something that typically out of all the images we have several online. We've always had a consistent image online, generally since the website first went up late last fall. But there's out of all the images, that one tends to be the most provocative because it is the most mainstream. It looks like something put out by Electric Sunglasses in their t-shirt line. It looks like something put out by a Billabong or a Lost Enterprises or any of these big selling t-shirts like, Vans. O'Neill or all the different people, places you might buy a t-shirt from. At the same time, of it looking mainstream, it is anything but. It is what I call eye candy. It's carrot candy for the eyes for the white rabbits. And a consistent image is, of course, is extremely subversive. It's extremely subversive because the Earth is by and large a closed system that, as Tesla said, it has electricity that is electrically alive, and that's why sound, just because you stop saying something doesn't mean that sound stops, it keeps carrying. It's kind of like a pond. We've been standing around a pond, and if you stand around a pond, depending on the size of the pond, on a medium-sized pond you can throw a pebble. If you throw a pebble, you're not necessarily going to see the little wave for very long, although it'll keep going on some level. But every pebble you throw, because the pond is a closed system, it changes the dynamics of the pond on some subtle way. Now, of course, if you have 100 rabbits standing around at different places on the pond, all throwing pebbles, you're all going to notice it. The effects are going to happen that much quicker. You're going to notice these little ripples go out. And that's basically what we've been doing with a consistent message. A consistent image adds a little more dynamicism to the game because you can see farther than you can hear, and it actually is more subversive. White rabbits are more easily subverted with image than they are with sound, but usually it's some combination thereof. And of course, what I'm saying is throwing a consistent image into the mix actually becomes more subversive and more dynamic and helps the process along, sometimes takes the process over. It also lets others participate that don't like opening up their mouths in a variety of different ways. And so that is our consistent image. If you go to the particular website, you're going to see a t-shirt, Undercover Lover. We're going to be introducing several different products with that on it. Whatever our particular printing partners can come up with, like stickers and lower cost stuff, although $25 isn't too expensive. And we're going to be plugging that. I'm going to be plugging it nonstop. It's a basic. People ask why Bob would wear a t-shirt associated with the site, because it's the basic. He's going to promote that. And of course, why are we going with the one without the website? Well, because you've earned the right not to have to wear a website. We don't have to wear a website. We don't have to wear a website in any way, shape, manner, or form. Because you can tell them Horace the Avenger. You can tell them White Rabbit Genocide. You can tell them Follow the White Rabbit if you want to make them work a little bit harder. You could tell them EuroRab. You can tell people anything you want. You could just tell them you bought off some wacky site on the internet. But the reason Bob wears a t-shirt is because it's a basic. You've got to promote the image in some way, and ultimately not just online, out in your everyday life. And it is something you've seen in many campaigns, something introduced, and a lot of different parties wondered which one we'd be going with and when we'd be introducing. Well, right now. But there has to be some proxy for success. It makes no sense to introduce one consistent image for you to get boots on the ground, for you to wear in your everyday life or use in your everyday life or however you want to do it or don't do it. It makes no sense to do it if you don't have an objective criteria for subversion, and search engines like Google are pretty objective. Yahoo is pretty objective, especially since we haven't used search engine optimization or anything like that. So since we've had some objective criteria of success, there is no harm in introducing a consistent image and plugging it. Plugging it nonstop, and you will see it all over the place, or we will try to see it. We'll try to get it all over the place, and it makes the game a little bit more dynamic. it makes the game a little bit more dynamic, or as some would say, a lot more dynamic, because you may see someone walking down the street with that t-shirt on, you may see that sticker somewhere. You can just only use your imagination on how dynamic it can become. But of course, we're going to be using, in the intermediate term, we're going to use it to support our server program. We've been growing at a rate that is rapid, to say the least. And we do not restrict downloads, other than when hackers try to do stuff, which is kind of funny. But basically, we're going to be talking to other alternative news and research sites about putting up links to our site, and we have to be able to handle not so much the traffic and the visitors. We're not even concerned about that, unless half the world comes one morning. But when people come to our site, they want to download stuff, and we try to make it as easy as possible to be able to download whatever goodies you want, including images or anything else. It only helps the cause. But we want to make sure we can continue growing at a rapid clip and be able to take on all comers when it comes to working with different alternative news partners, when reciprocating links, because some of these sites are absolutely huge that we're talking with, and we could handle one as is, but a few of them we're going to have to expand a little bit, and so we will be plugging the Undercover Lover T-shirt known as Eyes Forward. We will be plugging that image in the stickers and they're bringing out coffee mugs. Anything with that image on it, they're going to have there, and we will be plugging it nonstop. Typically, when you wear something with a website on, in any particular area, you're going to have, it's kind of like handing out flyers. You'll have, in any particular area, neighborhood, area code that you're in, you're going to have most of the people pretty cooperative. Most won't give you a hard time. There'll be one white rabbit that gives everyone a hard time. You know, the one that gives the kid a hard time that jumps over his fence to get their ball. You know, that white rabbit will look at the website, see the website on your T-shirt and look it up. And then who knows? But we're not here to cause. We're not here to fight. We're not here to argue. We're here to make our point. The wonderful thing about not having a website on a T-shirt is that you can say what you choose to say to the rabbit you choose to say it to. And also, you know, you're going to look cool. Yeah, the actual shirts look very, very, very cool. I'm not one that ever wears any type of regalia or ever has any type of stickers. I don't have American flag stickers, Confederate flag stickers, never bought them. Have nothing against them, never bought anything like that. I have maybe one shirt with an American flag on a sleeve or something, but I don't buy World War II memorabilia. I don't buy anything like that. I'm not someone that goes to the skinhead shopping sites or the Aryan wares, or it's just not my thing. So I was guinea pig to wear a lot of these different designs walking around. And as the weather's been getting warmed, I've walked around with pretty much all the designs on, save a couple. There's a couple I didn't, but whether it be the Green Goddess or the Eyes Forward, especially the Undercover Lover, or the different logos we have, the more modern one, as well as the one that is more Germanic or has some German symbolism in it. But generally speaking, most people don't even pay it attention. One in every group will and ask you about it. They'll especially ask about the eyes. The eyes tend to be the one everyone wants. The eyes without a website is just pure eye candy. But we will be plugging it nonstop, and we're going to kill three birds with one stone. We're going to make sure you get something cool to wear if you choose to. I mean, obviously, this is open to choice. And two, we're going to make sure we can support our servers, make sure we can continue to grow at this type of rate without having me and the partner having to, the people that have partnered for products having to spend tons and tons of money making sure the servers are supported and everything else. Basically, let it subsidize itself. And three, make sure we put out a consistent image. It's kind of like killing three birds with one stone, making you look cool, supporting our servers, and making sure we put out a consistent image that is A-OK, tip-top, can be on the street nonstop. Now, am I saying riding around on a lawnmower? Let's say you're one of these guys, and I have some listeners already doing this with products, with the WhiteRabbitRadio.net t-shirts. They ride around on their they're out cutting lawns and stuff like that, or maybe they, I believe one of them cuts lawns for a living. He rides around day and night. He has some different T-shirts rides around on day and night. Is that subversive? Yes, it is. Yes, it is, especially with the eyes forward images. It's very subversive because one person is going to ask about it, and he could say, "I got it online," or "Follow the White Rabbit," or maybe you want to go easy on him, let him make him work too hard for his carrots, and say White Rabbit Radio, or you could say White Rabbit Genocide. They're going to find it. They're going to find it. Some of the stickers they're going to introduce are going to be eyes, just the eyes, and others will have White Rabbit Genocide underneath the eyes. You can do whatever you want to with them. But I figured I would talk about the subversive nature of symbolism and the subversive nature of images if used correctly. But since we're so successful at subverting things, we might as well add the consistent image into the mix, put it out there, and then let you guys run with it on the ground and do whatever you want to. There's several listeners that like listening to the show. They don't necessarily be good at being on message other than defending themselves. They'll say, in your opinion, you're I'm a racist. You're just saying it because I'm white. Anti-racism, a code word for anti-white. And they want something else to do. And some of them are just pure waiting for our consistent image for what I'm going to plug or when I'm going to plug it. But there had to be some objective measure of success. There's no point in asking someone to plug it. When you plug something, it doesn't matter if it's a sticker, $2 or a $25 t-shirt. You know, most of my listeners could care less if they know the money's going to support the growth of the show. I already know that. I already know that based on how many emails I got asking where to donate. There is no donation here. But we always want to achieve an objective, and there has to be some objective criteria of success. But the subversion we just illustrated that you've been able to accomplish, is actually incredible. It's almost unprecedented, considering that there's been not a budget, not some elaborate budget. We're not we don't have some elaborate budget like the Jews who are trying to pervert things. The Jew rabbits and the pink rabbit banksters have these huge budgets and are trying to turn everything upside down. We're not doing anything elaborate. It's just every listener is doing what they can when they can to get out the message. And now we're going to add an image to that. And so instead of standing at this pond in each area code in each little country, each little zone, and throwing a pebble, you're going to throw a pebble with an image. An image behind it, or some combination thereof, or maybe you're not comfortable opening up your mouth at all, but you like the idea of having a t-shirt. Well, it is mainstream, but it's not. It is extremely subversive. It is what is feared. It is what is hated. This type of thing is hated, feared, and extremely, extremely violent. It's considered extremely violent. I don't consider it violent in this regard. I consider most of the images we see every day to be violent, but I consider this pretty much taking something back and using a particular skill set that yours truly has to take something back, and maybe to help out the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, because like you, I don't have a home. We still have all this land, but we don't have a home. And so we're going to introduce a consistent image into this. And I will be plugging it every podcast from here on out to help you get those out. Now, obviously, if you can't afford a $25 t-shirt, if you can't, the podcasts are always going to be free. Nothing else can be. Even if someone were to want to donate, typically what they do with the campaign. Let's go over the last campaign, because most of the listeners, I've never filled. I filled you in on the consistent message, but I never filled you in on how these images come out. Obama's image was a rising sun. It was a particular variation of a rising sun. They paid gazillions for. Some of the parties involved were some of the Jew Rabbit image producers, but by and large, there was nothing special about it. But they had it over everything, that rising sun image. In fact, when he flew a plane around the world, they had it on the plane instead of the American flag, which cost a fortune to put it. You can only imagine what it takes to take a plane and to put an image on a plane. It takes a lot of money. But the campaigns do that. They spend a lot of money on these images, but there's more to those images than meet the eye. There's more to it than meets the eye. It's incredibly subversive, some more so than others. But most of the racial audience I have would tell you that our race has by and large been subverted visually by putting a consistent set of images over a period of time. I think when our enemy was at its height, when the pink rabbit banksters and leasters were at their height, when the little Jew rabbits were at their most powerful, was actually when they weren't subverting stuff by having, a white woman and a black man in every single commercial. The height height of their power when they were just doing a sleight of hand stuff back in the 60s, or when they were doing the sleight of hand stuff with the Archie Bunker and the All in the Family. Some of it was in Archie Bunker's All in the Family was blatant subversion and over the top, but a lot of it was sleight of hand. In the 60s, when you talk about the multiracial stuff and the multicultural stuff starts seeping in, it was a lot of sleight of hands. It was a little things, and it's the little things that are more subversive with white rabbits, because if you have to shove something down their throats, they're gonna go with it at first, and they're gonna reject it outright. It's this candy carrot stuff that is so dangerous and so feared. It's feared by me. You know, some of those people say, don't you hate MTV? Don't you hate this? Don't you hate that? Yeah, I hate it all because I'm not in control of it. But by and large, the most subversive things that I hate are not the big things. It's the little things, because if you go over the top with them, they're going to reject it. On the other hand, little things conditioned over and over again over periods of time tend to be more dangerous. Having a simple image like our undercover lover on a t-shirt on coffee cups and with all my listeners in every area code in every neighborhood is far more subversive than a swastika, which everyone already thinks they know what it means. You know, no one thinks they know what our image is. It's considered occultic. I've been asked, it's considered occultic, and all the cult means is hidden. The actual message behind this, the t-shirt is hidden. It's hidden to anyone looking at it. All they see is two eyes staring back at them. And the message is, of course, a variety of different messages, by and large, white rabbit genocide, the mantra. It's distinctly ours. It's not, it's eyes forward. We're not dealing with anything in the past. And so you have your marching orders. There'll be different colors of it. They're going to have multiple different colors. I've tested this out and I guinea pigged it simply because I'm the ideal guinea pig. I don't wear any type of regalia or paraphernalia other than what I think is cool, you know. And I don't necessarily think flags are cool. If James Edwards was raising money for the political cesspool and he had out a he had a support his server campaign and he had out a Confederate flag or Confederate logo for Confederate History Month, I would buy it, and I would wear it no problem. But I basically don't go out of my way to buy that type of stuff. So I'm a perfect guinea pig, whether or not people want to walk down the street with something, because if I ain't going to walk down the street wearing it, it has too many messages behind it or too many mixed messages. Well, and then I figure most of my listeners won't want it on either. But this stuff is extremely cool. It is total candy carrots, and you can do whatever you want to with it. Now, of course, you can buy the one with a website on it. Anything with a website on is basically you're looking for a fight. That's really what you're doing. You're looking to pick a fight. Now, old Bob Whitaker, he'll wear stuff with a website on it. He doesn't really have a problem with that because he wants you to ask him about it, and asking him about it is like pulling a pin on a grenade. And you may have someone like that. You may want someone... Hey, lots of them were in a website. But typically in any given area, you know, you're only going to attract a handful that ask you about your t-shirt or where'd you get it, and you can make the choice. And there's going to be a variety of different images out. I don't know what he's going to, I want it t-shirts because it's versatile. You can put up a flagpole. You can hang it in the air. You can bring it out. You can keep one in a closet and bring it out at a critical time. You might want one morning. T-shirts are like that. They're very, very versatile, where a coffee cup is not as versatile, but all the coffee mugs are actually done. They're going to be out. But before I plugged anything, before I went forward selling any gear, and we've never really sold enough to cover costs any given month, but I've never plugged anything either. Before I brought out anything, we wanted to bring out a consistent image. And before we did that, we wanted to decide whether or not this was successful. And most have ruled this was brilliantly successful at the main job, and that subversion and taking something back and starting to get out a message broad, loud, and clear. But we want an image to go with that because it accelerates stuff. It lets people participate in other ways, and it creates a more dynamic game. And now, obviously, if you can't, you can also you can print out the image and cut the website off and put it in the back of your car. I don't care what you do with it. I'm just making it available. I know I have enough listeners on message in all these different areas, even around the world, that if I tell them the score and I make something available, I was never really worried because I figured they would order it, or they would use your noggins or get a hold of it or get a hold of the stickers. And like I said, there'll be, I don't know what all he's bringing out with them on, but I know there'll be stickers. stickers. Some of the stickers will have White Rabbit Genocide, and they'll be low cost. The two eyes and White Rabbit Genocide, and some of the stickers will just have two eyes. Maybe you just want the, you're one of these guys that carries a laptop bag, and you just want those two eyes on there. That's cool. That's cool. Maybe you're someone that wants to stick the two eyes on your toolbox. That's fine. You're fine. But typically walking around with an image all the time, playing into an image all the time, especially candied carrots for white rabbits, is the height of a subversion, believe it or not. But it is something you've seen your whole entire life. You just, most of the time, you don't know what you're saying. Whether it be the presidential campaigns, which they spend millions on this stuff, some of it's good, some of it's not good, or whether it be the stuff that we're doing. But if you're in Facebook, you only want to go Undercover Lover or Eyes Forward. That image, no one knows what it's about. There's a Facebook group that's growing. And that's all the image we use anymore on Facebook, because that's the only one that no one knows what it's about, so we don't have to worry about them coming back to the site or one of these groups complaining. Although I don't know if I could be banned anymore, but anyways, they changed all the rules. Every once in a while you get someone drop in on the group, and it'll be funny. They'll say, what's this all about? And the person will say, it's a Facebook group. You know, if you don't know what that image is about, maybe we don't want you to know. I've been asked, am I worried about, someone considering our images making it into a hate crime database or one of these hate image databases? Well, to be quite honest with you, they never bit. I have some images. What's funny is the Pink Rabbit Banksters and Elitesters in the cartoon under character, on the character development side, the Pink Rabbit Banksters and Elitesters actually have the eyes of a serpent. The converted Pink Rabbits, the one that the Red Hippopotamus makes into the Pink Rabbits, well, they have the eyes, the stars of Saturn. I never brought out the ones with the eyes of the serpent, because I don't want anyone to get the wrong idea. I don't want any mixed messages. But anyways, and the Red Hippopotamus, his eyes can change from the stars of Saturn to the eyes of a serpent. But anyways, that's another story for another day. We wanted to make sure we had images that they could feel free to include in a hate symbol database, because that's free advertising. A show like this has not really been heard before by you or anyone else. It's pretty unique, and it's designed that way. The images are unique. If you were to open up a hate symbol, it doesn't matter if you can Google Horace the Avenger right now and hit images, and you're going to see that red hippopotamus. You wouldn't believe how many people click that. That's a pretty gnarly looking thing. So if you were sitting there and you were a police officer, and let's say the Anti-Defamation League just spent $1 million or $500,000 redoing their hate symbol database, or the SPLC did that, and they would be so, we would be so fortunate as to be included. Maybe our rabbit image is SS lightning bolts, or maybe even a pink rabbit most likely, or a red hippopotamus. We're included in that, and they were sitting there talking to police officers, which is what they go around doing, and they were to show some of these different hate symbols, our symbols would be noticed immediately out of all, most likely, because no one's ever seen anything like it before. They would ask, what's that? What's that about? And of course the answer would be, well, it's Horace the Avenger's Follow the White Rabbit. They won't forget that. And then they're not going to forget the image, because you can't unsee something. And then of course they're going to say, well, what's this all about? Well, he claims that there's a process to genocide white rabbits, and then they would have to go into some spiel, and he's an evil racist, and of course most likely one of the police officers may say, well, in your opinion he's a racist, you're just saying that because he's white. Anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. And then say, you know, everyone says there's a race problem. Everyone says this race problem is going to be solved. It ends up in a nightmare scenario, because we're not, there's no images of black rabbits, there's no image of Mexi rabbits, there's no images of Arabs, there's no actual, we're using rabbits, and we're using a particular way to expose genocide. That's not something they really have ever wanted to engage. You know, that's not something they, it's a losing proposition, basically, is what I'm telling you. So I guess they could put out those eyes and spend a fortune putting out those eyes in all their different hate symbol databases and say this eyes, but people are going to hit that and say, what are this about? This looks like something right out of pop culture, and does. You know, it looks like something right out of, that you'd see in your local mall, some cool t-shirt that they charge $30, $35 for, or $20 and up generally. And typically, and then it's going to end up in more questions than answers, and they're going to come and listen, and it's going to be I'm just going to get more listeners. But it's designed that way. Anytime you come out with a consistent image, like a consistent message, if they're good, they create problems. Problems get reactions. Reactions provide reactions come with solutions. The only correct reaction to a good consistent message or anything you think is even close to good, the only correct reaction to the problem of a good consistent image is to ignore it. You don't want to make it public. You don't want to give it publicity. I mean, we're not doing anything illegal. We are doing something extremely subversive. Most people think walking down the street, or maybe even some of you think burning crosses or something like that is subversive. It can be. It can be. But it's also illegal in a lot of places. You know, start burning crosses on lawns, it's just kind of illegal. It's not illegal to walk down the street with a cool t-shirt on that has another meaning and that people are going to be asked about. One in every group is going to ask about. And then you make the choice of whether you say, I bought it on a crazy website, which is true, or White Rabbit Genocide, or follow the White Rabbit, make them work for their candy carrots. There's nothing more subversive in the world, and there's nothing more feared. And that typically goes hand in hand. A lot of times in the last campaign, Obama, all his t-shirts had that rising sun symbol on it, and of course people could see it a mile away and know that's an Obama supporter, and they come together and they form networks. It generally crystallizes the network quicker. It can be used in velvet revolutions for all kinds of seditious purposes. Different color t-shirts for different days, in-group, out. Sky's the limit on the imagination. It's just a consistent image. It's a basic. But we'll continue this when we go into the media. The actual movie and the media MP3 podcast is going to be next, and it'll be released a few days after this, hopefully. It's partly done, and I've been busy trying to get this ready to refine and to get some other input and to release a consistent image, because it's the only other step. It's the next step, and we go forward no matter what. That's what the symbol means, eyes forward. And it's unique. It's uniquely ours. It's uniquely yours. And you've earned the privilege not to have to wear a website. You can tell them whatever you want to say. And so if you're thinking about buying that expensive Billabong or that Vans X Bad Brains t-shirt with that big lightning bolt on it or any of that stuff, well, we got something for you. And you can support our servers. Yes, one thing we don't want to ever have anyone come to our website and have downloads bogged down or slowed down. We want to be able to keep up with demand effectively. Success requires a lot more planning than failure. And we also want to be able to hook up with some different sites and exchange links, or even if they offer reduced ad rates because they like our message and they give us an ad rate for a reduced cost. Some of the ad rates on like rents.com are extremely expensive. But at the same time, we can work with some of those different parties that we're talking with and be able to handle the downloads no problem. And that is a consistent image. Now, some people have asked me about the there's some of the alternative researchers that have talked about consistent images or talked about subversive use of symbolism. And one of the names that talks about the subversive use of symbolism, and he's right on many things, not everything. I think he takes it over the top, but his name is Michael Sarian, and yes, I've heard of him. I've been asked this several times. I figured if I mentioned his name, because he does a whole program on subversive use of symbolism. He does a whole program on symbols. You can watch him for free on YouTube. That's MICHAELTSARION, Michael Sarian, you can look him up, Michael Sarian Symbols. And you can watch his stuff on YouTube for free, and he does a whole program all the time all around the world on subversive use of symbolism historically. And he's right on many things. Images are very subversive. They can be. They can be beautiful. They can undermine things. You can do whatever you want to with them. We tend to stick to subverting things to our agenda. That's White Rabbit Genocide, not perverting them. But your enemy, and you can do an exercise, by the way. If you've got kids, you can do an exercise. You can ask them to find lightning bolts and things, and you'll find them all over the place these days and times. That would be a good one, like the different websites or even day-to-day basis. But one of your enemy uses a symbol quite often, and that's another exercise, probably even an easier exercise, because you can find out some of your enemies is the use of the Red Square. Now, most people think Red Square comes from Moscow and Red Square, but in reality, Red Square in Moscow, the word red or whatever it was in Russia way back was also meant beautiful. And that's where the Red Square comes from, beautiful square. You know, it's where the czars were crowned and everything else. But if you go to, let's see here. Let's go to one of the famous anti-racist rooms, and let's see what they're doing. You'll see a red square usually. Here we go. Go to Tim Weiss. You can Google Tim Weiss, T-I-M-W-I-S-E, Tim Weiss Red Room. And you're going to see that they're using it's a little bit longer than a square these days because he has all his blog entries on there. But they use the red square, this concept of a red. They've used it for a long time since the birth of communism. Concept of something red to walk through, you know. And of course, Egyptian symbolism set was always posed as red. You know, the red hippopotamus and. That's been co-opted by the communists, and they use it big now, is what I'm telling you. If you have a little kid and you say, you know, find all the red squares and everything in the different advertising, or let's say different logos, different business logos, you're going to see a lot of red squares. Now, isn't it distinctly communism? They just make things their own, but they sort of do use it a whole lot. That's one example. That's a very easy example. But symbols are very subversive. They tell friend from foe. If you're walking down the street and you saw someone with the undercover lover on, you know quite a bit about them. No one else would, but you would. That's the whole idea. Of course, we're not doing anything like the communists, but per se. But if you're interested in that, Michael Sarian, and I don't, like I said, I don't agree with him on every issue. He wrote a book that got him on TV called the Ancient Orients or the Ancient Origin of the Irish. Some of it's good. I like his stuff when he goes into research and does some research on the Hyksos. That's where I was interested in him from. But his talk about the subversive use of symbolism is by and large mostly correct in my eyes. It's extremely subversive, and of course. It always will be, you know, it always will be just to some level because white rabbits are very, very affected by images, sight, sound, but especially images. If you mix the two, you're going to be extremely dangerous. I was asked if old Bob wears a t-shirt. Oh, he's talked about wearing a t-shirt. Yeah, he gets all the t-shirts, and he will continue to. Everyone we bring out and all the colors he wants it. It's a basic. He likes doing that, and this is a big deal to him because it's successfully done something that they haven't seen done. I don't know if any of the white nationalists or any of the paleo conservatives have even tried to subvert popular culture back to their agenda. But you know, it's a big deal to him. So yeah, you would see him in a t-shirt most likely, and he does wear it. He's not he doesn't lie. But we're not really worried about entering into having the luxury of entering in some hate symbol database because it's so mainstream. That's what makes it dicey. That's what makes it subversive, basically. We're not really interested in that, although we gave them enough options to do that. You know, Rinse.com now has on Dr. David Duke. You'd think that'd be a big deal to ADL. You'd think that'd be a front cover story. You'd think that the Rinse.com would make it on the SPLC, you know, 40 to watch, but they don't. They're laying off. But, you know, there's not much they can do about it except advertise us. You know, when they talk about the political cesspool, or they talk about James Edwards, or even the Tommy Metzgers, they don't really debate them, or you know, they just look to smear them to raise money. There's just no money in it. There's no money in talking about us. The only correct reaction to the problem we create for them is no reaction. No reaction. In fact, I would say if anyone's running for office. Anywhere that is even moderately racial out in the open, they will not talk about it beyond the local level. That is the only thing you do with a consistent message out there. And now, of course, we're adding a consistent image. That is the only correct response. There's no response at a national level. They won't do anything else. And on the local level, they might write a benign report, and they might write a. They might write something saying, you know, either racist or neo-Nazi or something like that, but by and large, you're going to see them ignore it. It's not that they don't know we're here. They're just following the basics as well, because it's a losing game. There is no winning it. But they've always ignored Bob Whitaker. They've always ignored Bob's Underground's Reg Seminar. I mean, they're not really ignoring it, but they're ignoring it. You know, there's always different reasons why, and there's always different speculation why. It's simply the basics. That's what you do. And they will ignore this. They will keep ignoring this, which is fine. We'll put our images everywhere. We'll make it mainstream, and we'll become mainstream. Or we'll redefine what it means to be mainstream. How about that? And that's there's nothing else they can do. If their masters haven't outright sold them out last fall, which is what I think. And I think the SPLC and the ADLs they have masters they answer to. I think they've been cut off. That's my two cents. But we will keep on going on. We won't sandbag. We won't rest till we smell the rot of the pink rabbits. And there's no harm in putting out a consistent image. I've been asked when I was going to do it, why I didn't do it ahead of time. Well, I wanted some objective measure of success, because if I put out a consistent image, I'm really plugging something that people are going to buy or want to buy just to support the show. And I want to have a reason for the, you know, obviously some benchmark of success to use the money. Now, I'm not a very good businessman. Most businessmen wouldn't do that. But we're going to use it immediately to support our servers. We want to make sure we can continue growing this route. And of course, by all means, if my Japanese listeners want to order 100,000 of them, we'll cut them a good deal, and we'll hit the PayPal button at all the sites we like, and put another bank of servers in if they want to do something like that. But we can't really count on, we count on listeners doing what they are, where they are. When you do that, when you follow the basics, you can make a huge difference in only a matter of days. What you've seen with Subversion on the search engines, without any type of special optimization, we've done nothing special, you've done it, is mind-boggling, actually, to most. Most people thought we would never be in the first five pages of Follow the White Rabbit on Google, because that's a lot of work. That's a very successful podcast. I mean, it's just a podcast. And on top of that, you're not putting any money in advertising. It's just word of mouth. To me, that's a true measure of success, because if you're not successful, you shouldn't be asking. Shouldn't introduce an image that has to be bought, and you should have some measure of objectivity, some type of objective measure. So that's been incredible, and some people have lost money over that bet. What we've been able to do with the Yahoo is being on the front page for Follow the White Rabbit. That's amazing. If you hit Euro Rabbit on Yahoo, if you hit Euro Rabbit, you're going to see my little logo. But anywhere in the social media that's you're worried about getting booted off of, or you're worried about communicating, you go eyes forward. Use the Undercover Lover, and we will have a little packet of avatars. I have all the little avatars, all the little images reduced down. You can use them wherever you want to use them, wherever you feel like using them, wherever you don't want to get banned, obviously, for using something. But just the eyes, no one knows what they're about unless you know what they're about, and that's the whole ideal. And you can answer them any way you choose. You can say you bought it from a crazy website, you got it from a crazy website, you don't recall at the time exactly the phrase in your head, or you can tell them, you can tell them whatever. You can tell them White Rabbit Genocide, Follow the White Rabbit, make them work for it. It just depends. You do what you want to do. You avoid all the conflict that way. You avoid that one white rabbit that always wants to pick a fight with everyone for no reason, and you attract the other rabbits who like the little candy carrots. But that is a primer on consistent images, and I will plug this consistent image in every show, because that's what, just like I plugged the mantra nonstop in the beginning, because that's what we have to do to get it out there. And of course, you can, I can't really convince anyone to buy anything. I'm not good at that anyways. I can only plug something. There's no reason you can't print out the image and hang it on the back of your lawnmower, and, it all helps. It all helps. It's the little things. It's never the big things that make a difference. It's the little things, the basics, over and over and over and over again. And that's what makes a difference. The right image at the right time cannot be stopped. The right sound combined with the right image at the right time gets attention. It just works. It just works. Sight and sound. On top of that, we're going to give you something cool to wear. Those that want it, at least. And we will talk more about this. I will cross back over it, and it's pretty simple stuff. Maybe you just want one to hang in your closet, wear underneath your sweater, and that's subversive as well. Maybe you just want one to put up a flagpole, to put 10 on top of your house. There's going to be different colors. Those of you that want it, different colors. There's going to be certain pinks for girls, and it looks good on a variety of different colors. There looks really cool on brown or dark blue, and they're going to introduce that. The white one should be less money. As it stands, we can sell the t-shirt on, I got the t-shirt from a variety of different vendors that offer samples of, you put up your image, you get a sample, and the t-shirts they send out are some of them are okay, some of them are junk, sometimes they get the colors wrong, but it was good for experimenting, because our particular, the people that do our t-shirts and that do our t-shirts actually do screens, and they actually care about the colors because they're listeners. They actually care about it. And they do them a lot better. And at the same cost, we can have our little slice baked in so I can support our servers. But the Cafe Express, I was asked why we didn't just go up to Cafe Express and put up a cart, because, well, they'll send out samples. I can order t-shirts, but their t-shirts are actually junky. The show's cost on it would be $25. That's with no profit at all, unless we're buying thousands of them. That's not a viable solution. Second, they don't always look right. They don't look good. They're not making their own screens. They're not taking their time to care about it. So this was able to kill multiple birds with one stone. And the guys do a great job. So look for the mugs, look for everything with that image on it, or print it out, do what you want to do. I'm putting it out there, and I want my listeners to go to town with it. Use your creativity. There's nothing illegal in it. It's distinctly ours. It doesn't deal with the past. It's eyes forward. It doesn't deal with anything World War II. It's eyes forward. It is White Rabbit Genocide. It is unique. It is ours. It is very cool. Yeah, there will be sweatshirts, too. They got the sweatshirts done. There's black hooded sweatshirts, and I think some others. Anything that looks good with that image on, I told them to sell it, to bring it out, because I want that image in every area code, just like we want the mantra in every area code. It adds to the dynamicism of it and allows others to participate in other ways. Maybe you see someone walking down the street with that t-shirt on and you need a job. Well, who knows? Use your imagination on how this stuff works. It's no different than any campaign. It's no different than anything else, although we're doing something a little more subversive. But that's okay. That's okay, because we don't have a home. So they're doing something pretty subversive themselves, trying to kill us. And we will continue this conversation, and we will continue. And you can look, there'll be more products going up on there. And right now there's one up in black, at least by the time of this, and there should be stickers coming up, and there'll be red and all the different colors, as well as all the coffee mugs of all the different characters they have done. There's people that have been barking for those. But in general, we wanted to introduce a consistent image. If the show was successful, if the podcast was successful achieving any of its objectives, and get that in your hands immediately, because we don't want you spending money on something and say, I should have spent my money on the consistent image, or I shouldn't have bought the mugs, I should have bought a bunch of stickers. We want to make sure we get something down that achieves objectives. The ideal is to always achieve an objective and to always stick to the basics, because it always works. It always works. And it's not the big things, it's the little things. So pat yourself on the back and go to town with it, whatever you want to do with it. As long as it supports exposing White Rabbit Genocide. And I'll be back with you on 46. And on 46, we're going to go into the media. I'm going to do a big media special, talk about movies. I'm going to talk about video games. We're going to talk about some pretty wild stuff. And I'll come back into subversive imagery. So if you want to listen to the Michael Sirians or anything else on subversive use of images, a great percentage of it is true. But we're not looking to pervert anything. We're just looking to get home. To get out our message. And increase the ante a little bit. And I hope you've enjoyed 45, and we'll be back with you shortly on 46. We are now at the end of another episode of Horus the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit. And this podcast is, of course, all as always, dedicated to practical politics. But I'd like to take this time to thank you for tuning in to another episode. On behalf of the indigenous White Rabbits of Europe, it is yours truly, Horus the Avenger. And I'll be back with you in another episode in the near future. Until then, thank you for listening.